Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and producer, Jorgie Jorgensen, and our guest today is Tom Fee from Vector Wealth Management. Tom, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Tom, this is kind of the third in the series. We talked about how to plan and be ready to sell a business and how to transition from active to passive, and then we went into in detail in a prior podcast risk assessment and tolerance and timing and budget and assets and all that all tied together. Now we get to the point where we've got a business owner. He's sold his business. He's had the liquidity event. He's done all his planning and with you and PensionTrack and so forth. But now we've got this extra capital. Now we've had this liquidity event. How do you start building a portfolio for the passive investment part of your life?
Well, that's it's the final step. And I almost want to talk a little bit about...
We don't want to use that word final now, do we, Tom?
No. Not that final step. Hopefully it's not that final step. But, just kind of going aside for a minute, there's in Australia that has a very similar capitalist system that we have. They approach this business a little bit differently. They have now mandated that all employees have to contribute about 9% of their income. It's literally taken out of their salaries and put in a savings account. They have a much higher number of advisors per capita in Australia than they do in the United States. Their focus has been completely different. It's about personal responsibility. And in the process of this evaluation, the last thing that's discussed is investments. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's about getting the process right. That's still the key. Even though today, we're going to be talking about the investments. We'll eventually get there. It's almost like you just got to go back up and say, okay, we still have to look at the process. We have to say, what is the ability of the assets to match what the requirements, income requirements are going to be. You know, how much risk is it, can we take in the portfolio? And that's where we have to kind of go through and say, okay, here's what we've got. Here's the work earnout. Here's the Social Security. Here's the pensions. We're going to need, $50,000 this year, $80,000 the next year, $62,000 the year after that. And we come and we pull this all together and we now know generally what the investment policy should be, that we have, 18% of the assets are set aside for the first 4 years and 22% of the assets are set aside for the next six and 19% of the assets are set aside for the next six and the balance are the long end of our portfolio.
But that's based upon the annual disbursement, what I want to receive.
Correct.
Every year. Okay.
That's correct. So, and that varies. I mean, you might have two weddings coming up in the first 4 years that you have to pay for, or
okay.
You're setting aside money for 529s for grandchildren. So the amount of pull down that you have in each year is going to be variable. It's not static one amount for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at that variability and it's going to help determine how much of the assets are in the near term and how much can be dedicated to that long-term growth, like we've spoken before. You do have assets that will be dedicated towards 16 years out.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at that, if you're 62 and you need these assets 16 years plus or at age 78, should you be looking any different than the person who's 46 and needs them at 62? It's still 16 years. It's still the same number of market cycles. The markets are pretty agnostic and caring about what your age is.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to say, tell me what how much time we have,
before
and how
you
much
have
risk
to use
tolerance,
them.
And how much risk tolerance we have. So as we kind of drill down towards all of that, we try and ascertain, you know, what the investment policy is going to be is really dependent on how much of the assets are out in that long portfolio. Again,
so Tom, you're really, for a starting point, you're going to take a look at the needs of the client and what do they need in the short term, 3 to 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and then the rest of the portfolio is 5 years or more, it's more long term, and those choices between the short term monies and long term monies are going to have an impact on what your investment options might be for each segment, short term and long term.
That's correct, and actually it's four segments, short term, then next five, and then the long term is out at the back end. And what we're looking for is that if you, because the markets have, you can expect a lower, more variability in your rate of return in a 5 to 8 year portfolio than you can in a 16-year portfolio. There's more possible outcomes, so you have to be more conservative in that period. So that almost requires you to have more of a defensive mix in that 5 to 8 year or 5 to 10 year portfolio.
Term.
Correct. But out in that long end, out at that 16-year portfolio, let's just say, for example, that the client has sold their business and 50% of their assets could be dedicated to over 16 years hence.
Mm-hmm.
And we really know that they only need about 30% of their assets to really give them security. That says that they've got an extra 20% out in the long end of their portfolio that could go into their brother-in-law Bob's business or buying pork bellies or, you know, if they want to take additional risk, what we try and say to our clients is that ascertain what dollars you really don't need to have what you want with clarity and then dedicate those dollars to some different type of risk parameters that are non-standard, if you will, or less liquid or more risky.
And some of that could be legacy dollars, if you segment it that way?
They were if it's lost, or they could be if it wasn't.
So I'm starting to get a feel for this now, not just short and long term. You've got short term, 5 years, maybe medium term, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, and then longer. And that timing, the time it can be invested is going to have a direct impact on where you might invest it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's staging the assets by what drives most of the risk, which is the length of time that we have to invest the money. And then once you've done that, once the client says, okay, I got it, and we've got, maybe there's a lot of cash from the liquidity of a business or the sale of a business, but they've also accumulated other assets. So our job then is to really look at the current investments and take an inventory on that. We need to look at the gains and losses that exist within the portfolio. We need to analyze the underlying expenses. We need to judge the appropriateness of the products that are currently in place against the portfolio, not throw out the baby with the bathwater. If there's good things in there, where in this mix do these assets that are already there play?
Yeah, where do they fit?
Yeah, where do they fit best? And then we need to retain what should be held and adjust the rest with sensitivity to taxation. If you have a large value fund with a large gain that's maybe has higher expenses, but we would incur a $40,000 tax bill, we're going to retain that asset within the portfolios until and wean that down until over a period of time that's tax sensitive.
Unless you had some loss carry forwards that covered or something along those
exactly.
lines.
Exactly.
When you're first doing your assessment, you're taking in all the taxes and the inventory and where it's invested and the taxable nature of it and then start making some real decisions.
Correct. And then it gets there's an even higher level of complexity when you look at pre-tax and after-tax investments. You know, if you've got your qualified dollars, your IRAs or your 401ks, you might want to target some of the assets that you purchase that produce a lot of ordinary income. You may want to place them in the tax deferred accounts so that you're not throwing off what's taxed at ordinary income rates versus capital gain rates, at least as the capital gain rates and the ordinary income rates now, it's advantageous to have capital gains rates because they're lower, as most people are aware. So there's a lot of different ways that these things have to be spliced and then constructed to, as we like to say, we want to household all the assets. If the next 3 years is an earnout, that's a part of the income stream. That's kind of a part of the whole portfolio construction, and we want to make sure we get that right. But I kind of want to go to the side for just a minute. If we talk about what kind of products can be used out in this business,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a more creative industry for creating products in the financial services industry, and at the top has to be in the insurance companies. They will figure out some way of using that deferral mechanism that exists within an insurance policy to create products that are incredibly complex. And I think it's almost unreasonable for the average person to try and understand the complexity surrounding the products. You have multiple types of risk. You've got value risk, you have default risk, you've got liquidity issues around products. Some products that are sold, there's a penalty for taking them out for the next 5 to 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
That if you want to make changes, you simply can't. And they also tend to have less visible and hidden expenses inside them. So, and the challenge for the investor is to ascertain what's real and what's Memorex here. We've got, I'm dating myself a little bit. That was an old commercial.
I remember that.
You know,
it's a Realtors and Memorex.
Anybody that's over 48. But
here's the event I'm sure you're going to get to. The business owner sells his business, big liquidity event. People are crawling out of the woodwork. Relatives want money. Insurance people are selling annuities. Somebody with some schemes coming up. There's all kinds of offerings. And,
yes.
And at the same time, you're going through where their assets are and what they have. Now we're talking about risk assessment. Can you afford to do these things or can't you afford? And there's always somebody out there that's pretty excited about some new product, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lot of enthusiasm. There's a lot of belief in the value of their product. It really is. I mean, people, they absolutely believe that their product is the best thing. But there's also, we want to make sure the economic incentives are lined up. That's why we are a fee-based advisor. I prefer that because our revenues are based on set fees, not on any incentive to sell any particular product or work with any one vendor of product. We just go out there and select the best investment that's out there. There's a lot of good people in the sales business where it's the client's requirement to make the final decision. It's a suitability test versus ours, which is fiduciary, where we select these things and we have to do it as if we were the client for only for the client benefit. But there's good people out there. But I just think that today we should be able to seek the most neutral model for moving forward on this, where the alignments of the client and the advisor are the tightest. And I just tend to believe that on a fee-based model, it is. It's mm-hmm. Why not?
Tom, just to bring some clarity to that, you probably won't say this, but I can. When you're dealing with an investment advisor, you need to know how he's getting paid. And you've just said that. You're fee-based. You get paid a fee based on the amount of assets that you're managing,
right,
as opposed to somebody else that might be selling an IPO, getting some commissions, might be selling insurance product, getting some commissions, might be getting some fees. In the old days, there used to be people you just didn't know how they were getting paid, and you don't know what their incentive was for trying to cause you to invest in something. So the clarity here for the business owner that has a liquidity event is understand how your advisor is getting paid and make sure that you eliminate any conflicts of interest as much as possible.
Yeah, ask hard questions. Look them in the eye and say, I want to know the full compensation that's occurring on this product that you're giving to me. I want to know what the expenses are. I want to know what's going back to the investment firm. I want to know what's getting paid to you. And that's a reasonable question to ask within this business. I just think it should mm-hmm. have full disclosure, because if there's that, then you can build the trust. Because the thing about having an advisor relationship is the products that you're buying, you're not taking a car and driving it off a showroom. You're buying a product that's supposed to deliver a future value. So you want the compensation alignment to be appropriate with what you're buying. And if it's a fee along the way, it seems to be the most appropriate for my view. And then once you've established that you've got your relationship, you know where you want to be, you've detailed what it is that you're asking those assets to do, Then you have to start to select what are you looking for? What is this particular asset supposed to do? Is it supposed to be for income? Is it capital preservation? Is it growth? Is it a combination of growth and income through a particular structure, like, let's say, a charitable remainder trust, which we see being used with affluent clients that have charitable inclinations? It's a very, very interesting product. So those are all some of the possibilities that we try and take into account. But if I were to cite an example, I'd say that, you know, if a client has over the next 3 years, because there's going to be some income coming off of the business sale for about that period of time, it's going to cover 3/4 of that client's income need. 3 years out, that's going to go away. So how are we going to stage, what kind of products would you place? Now we know that
to replace that income that would be falling off.
Correct. 3 years from now. And if you were to think 3 years back and say, what would I want to own today to know that it would absolutely be there, unlike what we've seen what's happened in the market,
mm-hmm.
You'd say, well, you know, maybe a CD, maybe a government bond, maybe some type of product that gives you certainty of its presence when you need it,
mm-hmm.
3 years forward. So that first 3 to 4 years of the portfolio where the dollars from the client asset base are going to have to be providing an income stream should be there with certainty. So they could be, in our case, the way we look at it is 100% fixed income, where we're not only using the interest earn off of a particular bond, we're consuming the principal.
So the main focus wouldn't be on it, any growth income from it?
No, it's amazing.
Period.
Actually, if you look...
In that particular case, it's preservation of capital so that you can invest it at the end of the 3 years to replace the income that's being lost.
No, actually, we're going to consume the principal too. That first
part of the portfolio
is just going away. It's gone. So if you have a bond that's producing 4%, you're consuming 96% principal. If you have a bond that's producing 4.5%, you're producing 95.5% principal. So it really doesn't make a difference over the short term what the rate is. It's really more about preservation and having it there. So that in that particular case, you're going to have a very conservative portfolio. And I just want to mention the charitable remainder trust, which is where you would give a certain block sum of money to a specific charity, and in return for that gift, you get an income stream off of that block of dollars for your life, and then when you die, the residual goes to the charity. So it's an interesting mm-hmm. mechanism of creating that short-term or actually permanent-term income need while still meeting your inclinations for charitable giving, too. So we do see some of that used.
And you create a current deduction against some income that comes in. And then you still get the income stream for as long as you live, and then the charity gets the money at the end.
Exactly.
So there was a good tax reason, actually, to create a charitable remainder trust and solve a number of issues.
Exactly.
So would a higher education, college, university, would this fit into that?
Yes. They almost any of them, when you talk to them, they'll have a very specific program lined out for that. So they're wonderful if that's your inclination. So again, just to mention that as a specific. But then if we're sliding, now we've taken care of that first 3 years after the earn out has been spent.
Used up.
It's gone.
Collected.
So now we after, and then we take care of the next 3 years. Now we've got that, you know, that 3 through 8 or 4 through 9 years. You know, what is that portfolio going to look like? Well, again, as we talked about, the closer we are to today, the more variability there are in the results of the market. They could be up dramatically, they could be down dramatically. 15, 20, 30 years out, we see a much more stable, predictable rate of return. So the closer in, we don't have to have the certainty of the first 3 years, but we should be very, very prudent in how we stage that second part of the portfolio to, again, create a high level of comfort that those assets will be there. So
again, are we looking at growth and consumption?
Well, this particular portfolio, it will just be conservative growth.
Okay.
Eventually, it will become consumption as we move forward.
Okay.
But for right now, we're just asking it to grow moderately.
But back to your pension track, we're breaking down our life in terms of the next 3 years, maybe 5 years after that, and 5 years after that, and building the portfolio so that you have the comfort that you can build the income streams you need for each of those periods of your life from the various sources that are out there, be it Social Security or 401ks or taxable accounts and so forth. So what I hear you saying is time is a big factor, but then creating the income streams for each of those chunks of your lifespan are going to directly impact your investment decisions as you build the portfolio.
Exactly. You know, to summarize on the pension track, when we bring all of the assets into this application that is built for each client specifically because their lives are so different, it amazes me. I could put up 10 different pension tracks, and you would look at the assets and the incomes and the variability of how much is needed each year. There's not one that's the same. And when you do that, and then you start to say, okay, now we need to segment these assets into four specific portfolios that eventually has to come back together to be one portfolio. If you've got, I'm a numbers guy, so I apologize here for a second, but if you've got 18% of the assets for the first 3 years, and that's 100% fixed, and then you have 40% of the assets for the long end of the portfolio, that's 70% equities. When you run all the math together, you're going to end up with this really oddball thing like 62-38, 62% growth, 38% defense, but it's that way, not to be cute. It's because that's how the consumption is set, and that's how the assets have to be staged to match the consumption.
Mm-hmm. It's really much more complex than, you hear in the news all the time, you take your age from 100 and that tells you your mix of equities and fixed income or something. But what I'm hearing you saying is you take a look at all the different assets that you have, whether you've got an IRA or a 401k or a Roth IRA, and you kind of determine, when am I going to start receiving those funds? When does my Social Security kick in? What's my budget overall? And then where am I going to get the income to meet the budget? And you've already broken it down into much more than just short and long term, but your short term, medium term, the next 5 years, and each of those is going to have a different mix based on your needs at the projected needs at the time.
Correct. And what is an appropriate product? Is it appropriate to have pork bellies in your portfolio that you need for next year? I mean, no, of course not. I'm not sure it's appropriate to have pork bellies anyways.
Not today.
Yeah. But that's right. And so there's so many, again, in this industry, what tends to happen is, if you go to Money Magazine, they'll tell you that you can withdraw 4.2% of your portfolio safely. You'll take your age minus 100 plus your waist size divided by 2 to figure out how much you should have in equities.
There we go, Sam. Got that one?
all of these generalities to kind of commoditize the situation, to give us reasonable guidelines that really don't pertain to us specifically. It just has to be done from the bottom up. It's got to be done with one individual, with their life circumstances, especially with the complexities around a business sale, so that they can make decisions that pertain to just them. And that's why the pension track has never been turned into a program. It's an application specifically designed for each client to allow us to take in all of the variables that are unique to just them.
It's the investment portfolio is very personal.
Oh, absolutely.
And you have the opportunity with Pension Track to just, it gets complex, but you just take it one piece at a time and build it,
right?
And then start making decisions based on the taxable nature of the income and the timing, how much time you have to invest it. And it could be a combination of 100 or 200 decisions, but if you take them once at a time and then put them up on the board on the Pension Track, you can see whether or not that plan is appropriate for your client.
It becomes very visible. And from that visualization, we can determine the risk tolerance through that ability and willingness to take risk, which, again, is where we spend so much of the time. When you can show all this information and make it a complex situation understandable, then you can drill down to say, okay, you have the ability to be 80% in growth-oriented type investments. Do you really want that? You don't need it. down here, at the end of this deal, it doesn't show, you don't need to be that. Mm-hmm. And you might settle on a 60-40 on someone who could literally be 80-20. I don't mean 60-40 just equities and fixed, but generally defensive or growth-oriented. You really got to pick that, and then you can go through and say, okay, where do, if they have no real estate to speak of within their asset base, should we be investing in some real estate, and where does that fall? When that, should that be in the 10 to 16 year portfolio? Is that where that belongs? Because it's a private deal, it's a lack of liquidity, do you have the fixed income? Where do the preferreds, if you bought some preferred stocks, where do those belong?
Tom, we really didn't get into this, but a lot of the business owners own their real estate too, and they'll sell the business first, and then they'll say, I want to keep that real estate for a while, and I'll sell that later. That really enters into part of the planning as well, because it might be 7 or 10 years down the road, you have a second liquidity event, and then that refunds everything else, and away you go.
Correct. And what we'll do is we'll work that. Let's say they're getting $128,000 a year of rent on a 10-year lease after they sold their business. We'll put that in there, and then they do an exchange, a non-taxable exchange, at 10 years out into some other product that gives them greater diversification. Or they sell the building outright and have that secondary liquidity event. All of those things have to be calibrated into the portfolio mix. If you're going to get $1 million 8 years from now, then we're not going to have much money in that eight-year portfolio. Sure. We can shift those assets out further away from where the liquidity event is.
And Tom, the last issue that we haven't dealt with too much is the legacy issue. How does that factor into this planning?
Legacy, really, it's such an individualized thing. We'll say to our clients, look, if you want to leave a large sum at the end to family or to charities, that's your choice. But really what we try and do is we want to guide our clients on a year-by-year basis to say, do you want to see, if you're charitably inclined or if you want to be passing money on, will they be affected adversely if you give them money now versus waiting until they're older when you pass on? We really want to guide them to make better decisions every day, to really own their assets and make intelligent decisions, because it is the business they're operating now.
It's really no right or wrong. It's personal. What do you want? What do you want to do? When do you want to do it? And how much? And how does that factor into the plan?
Absolutely.
Any final thoughts on constructing a plan? I'm hearing this is a complex issue, but if you take it one piece at a time, it can be done and done well.
Yes, and final words would be, like they do down in Australia, you don't let the products drive the process. Let the process drive the products. Get it right, and then figure out what things fit into the plan based on how you want to use your assets.
Tom, this has been very informative, and I think our business owner listeners and anyone listening to this is going to have a lot better idea how to construct a portfolio and build it to suit the nature of their needs going forward. We're out of time for today. I'm Tom Lyons. For my co-host Sam Zordich, our producer Georgie Jorgensen, I'd like to thank Tom Fee from Vector Wealth Management for being with us on this segment of todaysbusinessradio.com.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.